depending on who you talk to, whatever their issue is, it's the most important one in Austin to them. And so we as elected officials have to treat them as such and do everything we can to address all of those concerns. One doesn't forsake the other. And I think that that is just a hard message to impart upon the citizens. When they see us spending time on things like a pedicab ordinance or spending time on things like a boardwalk on the south shores of Lady Bird Lake, all while we're going through a recession and have the highest unemployment we've had probably ever, you know, it's hard not to say, why are you wasting time on that issue and not on the bigger issues? But the reality is that we work on all of the issues all of the time, and we juggle a lot of different policies at the same time. And that's the job of a council member. Of a city like Austin, Texas, you have many, many issues on the table at any given time.
Well, I guess we'll talk first about one of the issues that you did bring up, which is affordability. What do you see the city's role as in terms of preserving affordability, preserving the ability of middle class and low income people to live inside the city and to live comfortably? What can the city do in order to preserve that?
You know, I think it's ultimately it is the city's responsibility. I don't think it's something that we can do to just stem the tide or to just slow down the high cost of living. I think we absolutely have a responsibility to maintain affordability, to create homestead preservation districts in East Austin so that property taxes are capped for longtime residents, while new residents are more than welcome to move in and build in the same area. That won't continue to gentrify historically older East Austin neighborhoods. It's our responsibility as government, in my opinion, to do what people can't do for themselves. And people can't control the cost of living necessarily. We can, from a policy standpoint, we can continue to invest in affordable housing. We can continue to do everything we can to maintain our utility rates at, you know, the lowest level possible. We can improve on our school system, on ensuring that families stay in the urban core of Austin. That's really one of the driving forces behind the cost of living, is that families want their children to be raised in an environment and in a school system that they believe is what's best for their children. Well, unfortunately, most folks don't believe that's in the urban core of Austin, and we absolutely need to change that. My wife and I are moving farther into downtown, and we're having a baby in September, and we're choosing, you know, to bring our family up in the middle of Austin because we love the city so much. But other folks have to understand that there are great schools in the public school system. But, you know, I think as a council member, we work on all of these issues. The other part of that, though, is working hard to maintain a strong economy. Since 2004, Austin has been the number one job in the entire, or number one city in the entire country for job creation. And that's not by happenstance. That's by hard work and recruiting companies to come here. And in some cases, incentivizing those companies to come here. But when we do, as a council, we get to impart our values. So we get to impart our minority and women-owned business enterprise ordinance that requires participation from all of our community. We get to ask them to work with groups like Workers Defense Project on construction issues. We get to ensure that domestic partner benefits are part of their health care plan. So that's why I think government plays a critical, critical role in not just affordability, but all of those other issues.
But has the council done enough? I mean, during your tenure, have you seen the council do enough to do that? Because, you know, I think most people would argue that Austin has gotten less affordable over the last decade than folks who would say it has stayed as affordable or has gotten more affordable.
Right.
I mean, could the council be doing more? You know, certainly you mentioned job creation. a lot of folks still being left behind. The Community Action Network's dashboard that comes out today says 40% of people living in Austin are considered low income, don't make enough money to live comfortably. Could the council be doing more? Should the council have been doing more?
Yes. The short answer is yes. If the council actually did enough, you wouldn't need a city council. So we always can do better, and we always strive to do better. The 40% of the folks that you're talking about that are in the lower income levels, take that as an example. Their disposable income, usually about 30 to 45% of their disposable income is spent on transportation. So what are we doing to improve public transportation and a multimodal system where folks don't necessarily need to spend 40% of their disposable income on their vehicle, on gas, that they can use a transit system that gets them where they need to go to live their daily lives? Those are the things that we continue to work on, that we continue to try to improve. So while I realize over the last, you know, over the history of Austin, it's always gotten more expensive, and that's not going to change. Things will inevitably become more expensive over time. What we do as a council is to try to manage that economic growth to where it doesn't negatively impact our residents as much as it could. If we didn't involve ourselves and if we didn't insert ourselves, I dare say it'd be a whole lot worse at this point.
You mentioned transportation there. A multimodal system that inevitably leads people to think of urban rail. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. You've been a supporter of urban rail in the past. And
I am.
You are. And the original idea was to have a bond election maybe as soon as this November. It seems like the support for that isn't maybe quite there yet. And folks are sort of wondering whether or not that bond proposal is going to go forward. Do you think that needs to wait? Do you think people still need to be sold on urban rail?
Well, I think the conversations are still going on. I think there is tremendous support for improving our transportation system. Again, it just depends on where you live, how you access it, and how to get from point A to point B. It's not just about urban rail. We need to expand bus rapid transit, which we announced 2 days ago, a $38 million grant from the FTA. That's going to be a tremendous asset to folks in Southwest Austin and Northwest Austin to take bus rapid transit into the urban core. Urban rail is another issue that's been talked about for years. I think it is a necessary component of our transportation system. But the reality is that it costs a lot of money. And this is Texas, even though it is Austin, Texas, which I think is a little bit more special than just saying Texas. We're in Texas, and people are proud of owning their vehicles and being very independent. We're not, we don't have the culture, the ingrained culture of using public transportation as our main source of travel. So it takes a little more time. And when you talk about the cost of building urban rail, that's where you run into a lot of resistance because there are some that will always believe that it's a better expenditure of our resources to either build more roads or improve roads. But again, it's multifaceted. It's not, there's no silver bullet that's going to, you know, kill this traffic jam. We have to work on it from every different angle, to expanding our bus service, to improving sidewalks and infrastructure and bike pathways and connectivity. And so I'll continue to work on that. I support urban rail. Ultimately, it's up to the voters because we're going to have to ask for them to help us pay for it. And so if it makes it to the ballot in November, the voters will have a choice on whether or not they want us to expand in that realm.
Okay. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. I want to go back to utility rates. Obviously, Austin Energy and the council is going through sort of a more drawn out process than was originally envisioned for figuring out how to increase rates and to cover a shortfall for Austin Energy. The mayor has said that the original ask from Austin Energy was perhaps too high for people to swallow. He certainly has favored slowing things down and taking a look at that. What would you like to see? What would you like to see in a final rate increase in a plan for Austin Energy?
I actually joined two other council members, Councilmember Morrison and Tovo, in proposing a modest 3.5% increase as opposed to what was being requested. Austin Energy was requesting a two-pronged approach that would do a portion of an 13.5% overall increase now and then another portion later. I don't disagree, and based on the information that we've been given, that Austin Energy needs to ensure revenue stability moving forward. But I don't believe that 17 years of inaction in terms of rate increases, we haven't raised our rates since 1994, 17 years of inaction can't be imposed upon a council and a community in one fell swoop. I think it's going to take some time. I think we have to question all of the assumptions that are being made. If you look at Austin Energy's growth rate prior to the recession in 2008, we had unprecedented growth. And so that growth caused our revenue streams to be very healthy. When the recession hit and when our projected growth numbers did not continue along that trend, we had already committed many things like renewable energy goals, and we had already made purchase power agreements and investments in renewable energy that we're now committed to. We can't just back out of them. So that's what Austin Energy is trying to do, is shore up the revenue stream so that we can maintain those values. We can stick to our commitments as it relates to renewable energy and not necessarily go bankrupt. But I think you have to do it realistically. You can't expect a community to take that burden in one hit. And so our proposal of 3.5% did not get support from the majority of the council. But what we're doing now is holding work sessions, multiple work sessions a week, really challenging the assumptions, really asking very in-depth, detailed questions about how the proposed rate increase was generated and whether or not it's really justified. But as it relates to not just energy costs, but water utility costs, you saw this in the last budget cycle. The historical business practice of utilities has been based on demand. We charge you a certain amount for the service that we provide and the energy or water you consume. We have to change our thinking and change our practice and not base it on consumption, but base it on service. If your business model is based on consumption, conservation never works. In fact, conservation kills. Conservation costs you money and causes rates to only go up. So until we change and unless we change our business model and the way we charge our customers, it will be one, regressive, and two, it will have any conservation, whether it's water or energy, will have negative consequences in terms of higher utility rates. That to me is the conversation that we need to have more of, that people need to understand why it's taking us so long and why our revenues are upside down, because we have been very aggressive as a community with renewable energy. We've been very aggressive with water conservation, but we didn't change our business model at our utilities while we were achieving all of our green values. And now it's costing us a little bit more in rates.
Was this conversation long overdue? I mean, 17 years is a long time to go. The mayor has said that he takes some responsibility for there being such a long time between looking at, you know, really doing something about Austin Energy's revenue situation. Yeah. You know, is this conversation long overdue? Should the council have done something? Should you have done something earlier on so as to avoid this situation?
Well, if I accept responsibility, and I do, I would say yes, we should have done something, but so should every other council that came before us. From a policy perspective, once you institute let's use this as an example, Austin Energy, once you institute a rate for a service and you don't have a budget policy that is tied to a certain index that will grow over time as the cost of service grows, as your population grows, as demand grows, and you have to come back each time and individually vote on it, it's a recipe for failure for those leaders. I take Capital Metro as an example. As chairman of Capital Metro, I took over in 2010. The agency was almost bankrupt. We were $4 million from bankruptcy. We went through a very difficult sunset review process. But literally, we had 38,000 customers at Capital Metro who, from since its inception, had not paid a dime for a trip. And some would say, good, they shouldn't have to because they were disabled and elderly. But the bottom line was we couldn't keep doing, we couldn't keep running the agency the way we have over the last 20 years. It was not sustainable. So we proposed a 50 cents fare for disabled and elderly. That, you know, if you're on a fixed income, obviously anything, any rate increase matters. But we felt like that was a good sweet spot, a good middle point for us to get to kind of stabilize our revenue streams and stabilize the agency. But because Cap Metro had not imposed rates for 20 plus years on these individuals, it was extremely, extremely volatile and difficult. Same thing is happening with Austin Energy. We haven't talked about it for 17 years. In my opinion is that in 1994, when we chose to raise rates, we should have placed a budget policy or a rate policy, if you will, in place that automatically triggers reviews and or rate increases based on our values, based on certain assumptions, based on demand, capacity, all of these factors that we're now having to take into consideration should be codified into a policy so that future councils, they already know that it's coming. So when you put your name on the ballot for city council, you're not going to get a surprise in year six that you're going to have to impose a 50% rate increase on customers. You're going to know full well what's coming down the line. And I think that's important.
And so you're saying that's something that the council should do now in this process.
I do. I think we should work on our business practice, change our business model to not be as regressive, but also lay out a clear rate policy that triggers automatic reviews and or ultimately the council has to vote on a rate increase. So you can't take that off the table. But at least folks will know if and when we hit these trigger points, whatever council is in place at that time, they're going to have to consider that a potential rate increase.
Last thing I want to talk about is single member districts. It seems as though support for single member districts is pretty much universal. There are some details that people will quibble about. First of all, do you support single member districts? And second of all, what flavor? I guess the 10-1 plan seems to be the one that has the most support right now. Do you support that plan?
Yeah, actually supported single member districts before running for council in 2006. In my first term, we created a charter revision committee, and I specifically asked that they be charged with bringing single member districts to us. They did, and the council at that time did not have enough support to put it on the ballot. I continue to support single member districts. And in 2010, when the mayor asked for another review by the Charter Revision Committee, I co-sponsored that with him. We brought this committee forward. They've been meeting all over the community for months now, since last fall. Their recommendation to us is a 10-1 plan, which is 10 single-member districts and one at-large mayor. There is a minority opinion of the same committee that one believes we should change from the at-large system, but should maintain some at-large council members. So a hybrid blend of maybe 8 single member districts, 2 at-large and a mayor at-large. I will support the recommendation of the Charter Revision Committee. It was a democratic process. It was a split vote, but the bottom line is even when the city council votes split on 4-3, it's either adopted or it's not. It's a final vote. And so I think we have to honor the work of that committee. I think it should be voted on by the council, whether or not it's placed on the ballot. I will be supporting the 10-1 plan.
Do you think there's, are there still, There are still some issues to work out in terms of how those districts are drawn and where yeah. those boundaries are. Do you think that's all? You know, the committee didn't exactly spell every single detail, but right. those discussions will be ongoing.
Yeah, they are. So the committee recommended an independent redistricting commission, which I think is a great idea. But one, I dare say you'll find anybody independent in this town from political influence. And two, it specifically says redistricting. So that, to me, connotates after the next census. Well, we're going to impose this, if it passes this November, we're going to impose this as soon as we can. What I've asked is, so is there a recommendation, the initial drawing of those districts as well as redistricting, or just redistricting down the line? Those are important distinctions because I promise you people will be in favor or opposed depending on the responses to those questions. The other thing is that while we do have, I believe, broad support for moving to change, whether it's a hybrid system or a single member district system, I think the community is ready to move beyond an at-large system. But I promise you the debates are not over. The minute any district lines are drawn and the minute residents find out that their neighborhoods are split in half or that their children's school isn't in their district or for whatever various reasons, I think the debates will continue. Now, I still think people will be in favor of moving forward and changing, but I dare say that the public discussion is far from over on this. But we have to keep working on it. I believe that it's time to move forward. We've put this on the ballot 6 times. It's failed all 6 times. We have to get this right. Otherwise, it'll fail again if we don't do it right and if we don't maintain that broad consensus that I think is out there right now. So I look forward to that, you know, in the next 6 months, getting it to the November ballot. I think we will have some of the highest voter turnout in the history of Austin this November, and I think it's appropriate to get it on the ballot this November.
All right. Mike Martinez, thanks so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time.